Davis steps under center. Gibson and McClendon behind him. Davis with motion by Richard. Will give the ball to McClendon. He leaps. Oh, he doesn't get in. He fumbled the football. Carolina holds. The game is over. And Carolina has won the game.
Finley to throw. Over the middle, intercepted. Wolfolk again. Wolfolk the other way. At the 30, the 40. Wolfolk to midfield. Miles Wolfolk with the pick. The heels on the doorstep of an enormous victory.
Left side of the line. Hood standing to Williams' right. Williams going to throw. One-on-one. Davis has it. Touchdown. Carolina wins. Carolina is the Coastal Division champion. Bernard fields it at the 26. Heading to the far side. Gio at the 35. Gio, he's at the 50. No, he's not. Yes, he is, Gio. He's going to take it for a touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Connor Barth for the possible win. Snap, spot, kick away, high enough, long enough. It's good! It's good! Carolina has won the game on a 42-yard field goal by freshman Connor Barth. Good gosh, dirty!
This is the Heel Tough Blog Podcast.
What's going on, guys? Anthony Pagnotta here on a Saturday early evening into late afternoon, whichever one you want to classify it as. And unfortunately, guys, we wish we were coming on here today to talk to you guys about what's going on the basketball court. But Carolina, of course, is out of the NCAA tournament. And so Carolina fans, I don't know what you're doing today. I'm going to watch the games. I got to admit to you, I'll watch the games later on tonight. The second game will be incredibly tough. There's no doubt about it because it should be Carolina playing there against Clemson, but they didn't get it done. And so now we have to sort of shift our focus just a little bit. Carolina, there's still going to be plenty of stuff going on the transfer portal trail for Carolina. There'll be a ton of news coming out probably on that within the next couple of weeks here, whether it's outgoing guys for Carolina. You also have the decision of RJ Davis and his future in Chapel Hill. And we'll have you covered on all of that throughout this offseason for Carolina basketball. But hey, let's talk a little bit of Carolina football, guys. And I know that, you know, there hasn't been a ton that's come out of spring practice, and we haven't heard Mac Brown talk yet. So we can't really do anything on what's been going on in spring practice just yet. But we can talk about some of the things that we did see this week or within the last week for Carolina on the football side of things. And it involves a pro day for guys that were formerly on the roster trying to make it to the NFL level. And it involves a guy on the 2025 recruiting trail that has committed to Carolina. Also, another one of their targets on the 2025 trail heading elsewhere. What does that mean for Carolina and where do they turn their attention now? We'll talk about all of that here today. But as I mentioned, the biggest thing that happened this week for Carolina was the pro day, and specifically the pro day of quarterback Drake May. And that was where all the focus was on Thursday. Tons of NFL scouts in attendance, tons of GMs, or not tons, but a few of the important GMs were there in attendance, particularly Adam Peters, the GM for the Washington Commanders, who hold the number 2 overall pick in the draft, and the GM of the New England Patriots, Elliot Wolf. Gerard Mayo is their head coach. He was also there as well. But Elliot Wolf, the GM of the New England Patriots, was also in attendance. But yeah, you had the head coaches for both of those teams as well. Dan Quinn, new head coach for the Commanders, as well as Gerard Mayo, the new head coach for the New England Patriots, also in attendance. And both of those teams, big dominoes in the race for Drake May. But there's a couple other teams that are involved. We'll tell you a little bit about that here coming up. But let's just, you know, talk about the day overall for Drake. And I thought overall pretty solid. I wrote, you know, recapping the day, very solid was kind of how I laid it out there. And I think a lot of people, if you just judged off of social media, and I get it, if you didn't want to pay the money to get NFL Plus if you don't have it already to watch Drake's Pro Day. Trust me, I totally get that. That's a lot of money that you have to put into that just to watch that. And who knows? I mean, there's some other content that they have on there, but you know, I've gone back. I've tried to watch games in the past and had issues with it. So I get it. I, you know, spent the money, watched Drake throw, and you know, just from what I saw, you know, I thought it was pretty solid, even though the internet will tell you that it was a horrible day for him. And a lot of the people that are telling you that are, of course, just fans. They're people that tuned in for a second and watched it. They watched some of the highlights. They watched, you know, particularly one missed throw that has been making the rounds on social media. And they say, look, this shows you everything that you need to know about Drake May, that he's not a great quarterback. And judging from what we've seen from the scouts, from people that cover the teams, from some of the reactions of the coaches that were in attendance, that isn't the way that any of the people around the NFL are feeling about this pro day. Yes, there were a couple of throws that were not great that brought back the concerns that people have had about him being consistent in the short and intermediate portions of the game, but the deep ball was really what impressed a lot of people, and that was what really stood out from him. Those throws that he made in the deep portion of his script were outstanding. And he didn't have an incompletion in that portion, which is not shocking. I mean, he's a guy that made the most big time throws in college football over the last 2 years, according to Pro Football Focus, 10 more than anybody else. And he's a guy that, you know, overall, I know there have been some people that have questioned the deep ball accuracy, which is just insane to me. I don't think, out of everything that you could question with Drake's game, I think the deep ball is probably the thing you question the least. I think that is the most NFL-ready portion of his game, and he showed that to the people on hand on Thursday. I thought he looked really good when he was thrown from the pocket. He looked even better when he had to throw the deep ball rolling out, and that is something that I think NFL teams have to be really impressed with, is that this dude on the run has about as strong of an arm as just about anybody in this class. And there's, you go back, you look at some of his highlights, throwing off the back foot, he still can make impressive throws down the field. I mean, this guy has what it takes. And I think he did enough the other day to really seal the deal of, if anybody had questions about him possibly being someone that can go to the NFL level and with the right coaching can end up being a guy that, you know, could be a borderline star at the NFL level, I think those questions were probably quelled. Now, the thing is that the short and intermediate games, the misses, those are things that you're going to have the right coach to be able to work that out of them. I think you saw a couple of misses. One of them was where they were, you know, simulating a little bit of pressure on him. That's where we have seen him struggle, missing some guys with some of those easy throws towards the end of each of the last two seasons, primarily this year. But I do think that in high, you know, if you can get the right coach and you go back and watch him early in his career, and that wasn't really a problem for him, even at portions early last season. I know there were, you know, a couple of interceptions that left people scratching their head, but for the most part, a lot of the short to intermediate stuff was on point early in the year. It's when that offensive line really started to dissolve in front of him in each of those years that you started to see the mistakes pop up. And so I do think it's going to take the right coaching staff to go back, evaluate them, you know, try to figure out if that's something that they have, you know, that they can work out of him at the NFL level. If they're the right coaches to do it, if they're in a situation that probably serves him best, and if they do, then I think they're comfortable with everything else that they saw from him. Now, in terms of everything else that was going on around him, the other thing, by the way, that I did want to mention before we move on, talk about some of the other stuff that we heard in terms of who he was meeting with and the teams that are interested in him, was the pace of the workout. I thought that was really interesting, and I think it'll be something to look back on and really wonder with if teams do end up passing on him and he ends up falling a little bit, because I think that the script overall was really good. He wanted to throw a ton of passes, really display to the people in attendance that he can make just about every throw that is out there. And I think he did that. He, you know, ran over 70 different plays, ran some back. So it was a 70 play script that ended up becoming more like 74, 75. He had 5 incompletions the whole day. And when the one thing that, you know, a lot of the analysts were saying was that they really liked the fact that he went back to throws that he missed. There are a lot of guys that typically when they miss on a certain throw, they'll just say, hey, we'll move on. And that's a throw I've made before in my career. They can go back to the tape and watch it. Drake wanted to make sure that he proved to these guys that, no, I'm going to go back. I'm going to make sure I'm going to go back immediately, very next play, and make sure that I show them I can make this throw and execute it almost perfectly, because that's what he did just about every single time that he went back to a throw that he missed. He came back and hit it perfectly to whatever receiver it was on that next play. And that's the important thing, is that he's a guy that knows when he makes mistakes. He shows that it's, you know, one lapse. It's not something that's consistent. It's not something that's just a part of his game that can't be worked out. And so I think that's what a lot of people liked about what they saw from him. Now, the one thing that was interesting that a lot of them pointed out, and I noticed as well, was the pace of the workout. The pace was unbelievable, which is, you know, I think is good. You know, Drake said that he wanted to work up a bit of a sweat. He wanted it to be a legitimate workout, you know, because he thought that that would help, I guess, simulate some of what you go through in a game. Not really sure. But it was definitely noticeable that he was sweating and he was breathing heavy at certain points. And you do wonder if that was really the best strategy. And look, far be it from me, I'm not a quarterback guru, anything like that. He had his quarterback coach from QB Country that was there, that had this script set up. Everything was in place. I believe that, you know, maybe it was Drake's decision to go through it a little bit quicker, but it was probably a joint decision to say, hey, we want to move through this workout pretty quickly. But I do wonder if that was something that led to some of the missed throws, was because of how quickly he was going through it. It seemed like he was getting a little out of breath at times. And, you know, he could have taken things a little bit easier, especially on a day that's there to showcase you. But all in all, look, I still think it worked out really well for him. I think that he still made all the throws that he had to make. The ones that he missed, he came back to and corrected immediately to show that they're not flaws in his game, but just momentary lapses. And so I really do think that it was a very solid day that probably helped him out. Now, in terms of who he talked to, there was one meeting that was confirmed by him in the press conference that he held after his workout was done. And that was the one that he had with Patriots brass right before the workout on Thursday. And it makes sense. The Patriots have been doing their homework on these quarterbacks. Now, the thing is that there was a report at one point that the Patriots were not really interested in him. They were more interested in Caleb Williams if he fell, in Jaden Daniels. And if they didn't get either one of those two guys, then they were going to move off of the pick. And look, I think it's certainly still possible that that ends up happening. I know that there are a lot of people around the scouting community that say that Drake is one of those polarizing prospects at this point that people are either in love with or they're looking past and just saying they don't see it there for him. I do think that the Patriots may truly be one of those teams that are on the fence, because head coach Gerard Mayo, I don't remember who exactly this quote came from. I believe it was an article that was written, or maybe it was a podcast appearance, something like that, where he was asked about Drake May, and he said that there is no ceiling for this kid, that he is a guy that has a ton of upside and that the future is incredibly bright for him. And I think that hearing that from the head coach of the team, now your GM has to be all in on him as well, but I think hearing that from the head coach of the team tells you that there is at least one person in that organization that is in his corner. And ultimately, I think if it's the right trade package, New England probably would trade down. Don't know how they perceive some of the other guys. I will say this, the fact that they had that big of a contingent there for Drake and it didn't seem like they were represented at Michael Penix's pro day probably shows you that this is a group that's looking to draft someone early at the quarterback position. They will not wait. Even if they trade down, they will probably be praying, crossing their fingers and praying that somebody drops far enough to 12 to be able to select them there. But, I really do think that this is a group that more so than when they were at the combine is considering Drake May, because apparently there were a couple of moments that they seemed really impressed by on Thursday. Another team that seemed impressed by some of the things they saw were the Washington Commanders. Now, for them, I think they're in a much different position than even New England is in the fact that we know that the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams at this point. They were not represented there the other day. If they were, it was a low-level scout, and he may not have even been there to specifically focus on Drake May. It may have been to focus on the other guys that were working out for the later rounds. So it's going to come down to Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy for the Commanders. Now, recent reports have pretty much said that the Commanders are now strongly considering J.J. McCarthy. There are some people that even believe he is the favorite to be the pick there. And that would then create the interesting discussion of Jaden Daniels or Drake May at number three to New England. So I still think there's a lot of dominoes to fall, but I do think that if there were people that had thought that Drake was officially off the table for the Commanders, that Washington wasn't going to look at him and consider him, I think you can probably push all that to the side, because when you send your GM there, when you send your head coach there, you are strongly considering a prospect. And there were a couple of moments that some people in attendance said you could see Dan Quinn visibly impressed by what he saw, some of the reactions to certain throws. That's something that if you're someone who wants Drake to be drafted as high as possible, you probably feel pretty good about that and about his chances to still get drafted there. Ultimately, I do think that the buzz behind J.J. McCarthy is real. I think a lot of people, this happens every year before the draft. There are certain quarterbacks that get locked in on. People start breaking down certain film. I think what helped J.J. McCarthy a lot was throwing at the combine. And I think ultimately that may lead some of these teams to have him higher on the board than Drake May, a guy who seems to, at this point, be getting torn apart by a lot of the NFL draft experts. And it could, you know, potentially be rubbing off a little bit on some of these teams as we've gone further and further along in this process. But I do also believe that this is a guy that, because of the way that he interviews, and he's still going to have top 30 visits, you'd imagine both the Patriots and the Commanders are going to host him for those at some point, because they can have him in for private workouts, that this process isn't done just yet, and that there's a chance for him to still impress with some of the things that he does. I don't think it is completely off the table. But let's say that those two teams, even with what they saw the other day, are saying, yeah, we've seen more from the other quarterbacks. There's two other teams that I think are still very interesting here. And in terms of their representation the other day, they weren't nearly as strong as what we saw from the Commanders and Patriots, but you still saw the Giants send, you know, a couple of scouts out there. It wasn't anything too big. Wasn't like the group that they sent to the pro day of Michael Penix. But the thing is that it feels like the Giants already have a pretty good understanding of Drake May. Already held the top 30 visit with him last week. Expected to have a private workout with him sometime here in the next couple of weeks or so. And so I feel like the Giants, everybody's reading into it and saying, well, that means that the Giants really have, you know, that report that they really like Drake, they've sort of fallen out of love with him. No, that's not the case. I think the Giants are really just doing their due diligence. I think they're very concerned that some of the reports that we've seen from some people that quarterbacks could go 1, 2, 3, 4 in this draft could be something that happens. I don't know if the Giants believe they have enough draft capital, especially after they ended up making the trade for Brian Burns. They don't know if they have enough to make that jump up even to four, although I think if the Giants are going to make the jump, they'd probably be more comfortable jumping to three to be able to make sure they get whichever guy they want. And so I think that's part of the reason why they are looking and doing their homework on a guy like Michael Penix Jr. And I still think that this means there's a chance that the Giants could still go after him. I don't think that the reports of the Giants really loving what they saw from him, I don't think you can just all of a sudden completely flip that. But there is another team that's emerged that I think may be more aggressive than the Giants when it comes to going up and getting him, and that is the Minnesota Vikings. There are more reports starting to come out. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN saying that multiple sources around the league tell him teams believe that the Vikings are very, very high on Drake. And a big part of that is their new quarterback's coach, Josh McCown, who was Drake's quarterback coach in high school. He was there the other day. And I really do think that, especially with the quarterback situation that Minnesota has right now, this makes some sense for them. And if you are a Tar Heel fan, this is probably, unless you root for one of these other teams, this is the situation that you should be rooting for him to land with. One, there is a possibility that he could sit. Now, the group of quarterbacks that would be ahead of him, Sam Darnold, Nick Mullins, Jaren Hall, not the greatest group. Jaren Hall played one game last year, got hurt as a rookie. Don't think he would be the guy to learn from. Sam Darnold is a guy that's been in the league for a long time. People think he has a lot of potential even still to this day if he landed in the right offense because of his arm talent. Still a guy that I don't know if you necessarily want Drake May learning from. And Nick Mullins is a guy that's been around, been a backup in the league, has done some really nice things, but is incredibly inconsistent. And there's a reason why he's stuck as being a backup that's serviceable enough to come in and win you games, but probably won't be getting a starting job anytime soon for a long period of time in the league. That would mean that if they brought him in, Drake might start out the year sitting, but this infatuation that some people have had with the Jordan Love situation in Green Bay and transitioning that onto Drake, I don't think that would be possible in Minnesota. Now, I don't think that it's crazy to think he wouldn't start the year for them there, but I do think he would probably end up being the number two quarterback on the depth chart. There would come a point where Minnesota would be struggling enough where they feel like we need to go with a change of quarterback, similar to what they did this past year. Even after acquiring Joshua Dobbs after the Kirk Cousins injury. And I think that ultimately Drake would probably end up coming in there. Now, the thing is I've started to come around on that thought a little bit of him sitting, because I do think the recipe that you see with Jordan Love is one that can be really successful, but it's about being behind the right guys. I don't know if Minnesota would be that spot for Drake, but I will say this. If you're talking about him going to a situation, even if he finds a way to win the starting job right away, if you're talking about a situation for him to succeed in immediately, out of all these teams that are looking at him in this draft, this is the one that sets up best for him. They have arguably the best receiver in the league in Justin Jefferson. They have a guy who may have been the best rookie in the league last year in Jordan Addison, who on any other roster would be projecting as a really, really strong number one receiver in the years to come. They have tight end TJ Hockenson, and they went out and acquired Aaron Jones, the running back, in the offseason from the Green Bay Packers. So I think there is a legitimate chance that Drake, I think, would probably be in a really good spot if he was to go there to the Minnesota Vikings. And I really do think that, if he goes there and gets with Josh McCown, a guy who has worked with him before and has had a lot of success with him, then I think that would be a great spot. He'd have a guy there, and Ty Chandler has been with him before as well. Now, he didn't play with Ty Chandler. He wasn't out there with Ty Chandler the last 2 years. He's really been primarily with Amarian Hampton, as well as some of the other guys Carolina's rotated in that backfield. But Chandler was there with him when he was there as a true freshman back in 2021. And so that even just having a guy like that there could be really helpful for him. So I think that's probably the perfect scenario. It's just about, can Carolina find a way to get him into that scenario? All right, let's move on to some of the other guys that were participating the other day. Cedric Gray, another guy that a lot of people were very interested to see. He did not run. He did not do any of the workout drills. He did not run the 40. He did not do the vertical. He didn't do any of that. All that stuff that he did at the combine, he said, you know what? I'm not going through all that stuff again. He did the three cone. He did the short shuttle. But we did go through workouts. And one of the things that was really interesting was that he went through the workouts with Steelers linebacker coach Aaron Curry. And the reason this is interesting is because the Steelers were a team that talked to him at the NFL combine. Aaron Curry and him also sat down before this and broke down film together. So there is some genuine interest here from the Steelers. Now, the thing is that's the only team that we've really seen people talk about have genuine interest in him at this point. I really do think that there are other teams that are looking at him that have maybe talked to him, but that it at this point, it just hasn't been reported or, strongly considering him. And so I think that the Steelers right now are that team that if you're looking for the one to watch for Cedric Gray, whether it's in the second round, it's in the third round, that's probably the team that at this point, I think you probably have the best chance of seeing him get drafted to. I think, there'll be teams that'll bring him in, probably a guy that will get some top 30 visits, and that'll really give us a better understanding of some of those teams that are looking at him. But as of right now, the Steelers are that team that really seem to have honed in on him. Meanwhile, Tez Walker went through the workouts, big part of the group that was out there catching the ball for Drake May, and he caught the ball really well. Ball didn't hit the ground on him again, and that's really, really encouraging because he looked really good at the NFL combine catching the ball. He looked good here. And look, there are teams that will look at the Senior Bowl, and that's what they're going to base their evaluation off of him on, is that combined with his film. Because what you saw at the combine, what you saw in his pro day, it's not these guys, it's not him matched up against corners. It's not him having to play through contact. So that's one of the things that's still going to be a concern for teams. But you needed to see him catch the football well at both of these events in order for teams to still be confident in him. Because if he would have struggled in either one of these days, it would have made a lot of sense to think that he would be a guy that teams would take completely off their board. I don't think that's the case. You look at the reports. I mean, he had five teams that met with him at some point, prior to the workout. The Patriots, just like they did with Drake May, they met with him as well. A lot of people believe that if they do draft Drake, that this would be the guy that they'd want to bring in to pair with him at receiver. But he also met with the Bills and Jaguars, as well as the Jets and Cowboys. And the first two, the Bills and Jags, are teams that he has top 30 visits set with. So there's a lot of people that are still pretty high on Tez Walker because of his ability to win down the field. When you run a 4.36 at the combine, that certainly helps you. But you could see that speed on tape. The thing is that looking at a lot of the draft boards, he's a guy that's sitting in the middle of that third round now. And it makes sense when you struggle the way that you did at the Senior Bowl, and you see the way that some of the other guys that were around him at that time, Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Keon Coleman, a lot of those guys have had really good workouts, looked good at the Senior Bowl, and they've really solidified themselves. Because of that struggle at the Senior Bowl, he's dropped into that next group. But I do think that this gives him a chance to be one of the guys that stands out from that next group. There's, a group of guys that have really been trending up, led by Malachi Corley, that have joined that group, the slot receiver from Western Kentucky. But I think there are a few guys that you can look at and say bring you the same thing that Tez Walker does in once you get into that group of guys that are bunched up there late in that second round, early into the third round, because he just has the ability to win over the top and be the deep threat that so many people are looking for nowadays at the NFL level. So I think he's in a good spot. Those top 30 visits, I think, you know, could really give him an opportunity. I mean, the Bills team that's looking for a deep threat with Gabe Davis having left this offseason, the Jags, of course, losing Calvin Ridley, a guy who was a downfield threat. So both of those guys, both of those teams looking for someone that can win deep. And I think he could be a guy that, especially since you can probably get him in that third round, maybe trade back into the end of the second round, if you feel like somebody really likes him that much, it's less risk than some of the other guys earlier in the draft that a bunch of other teams are probably going to covet. Miles Murphy, not much that we heard from him. I believe he was he went through workouts, but not 100% sure about that. You'd think with all the teams that were in attendance, he probably did. The Packers, Texans, Cowboys, Giants, Eagles, Vikings, Browns were the teams that showed interest in him at the combine, but nothing else has really come of it since then. He's a guy, though, that when you look at some of the big boards, he's fallen into that seventh round to undrafted range. A lot of people, I think, were concerned with what they saw from him at the combine, even though we weren't really shocked that he didn't move incredibly well, even though I thought he moved pretty well in the drills. I think side to side, I thought he did a good job showing how fluid his feet were and stuff like that. It's just he didn't run well. The 10-yard split wasn't great, which probably gives people some concerns about his explosiveness off the line of scrimmage. But I think that if there probably are teams that, even though these experts have dropped him into the seventh round, there are teams that may look at him earlier because of what he did at the East-West Shrine game, which, again, when you go back to those games, I think those games should weigh more than what you see in the combine and in the pro day. Yes, you love seeing the athleticism of guys in certain positions. It makes a lot of sense to take those into account. When you look at a guy that's on the interior of the defensive line that's probably going to play nose tackle at the next level, I don't understand why that weighs so much. And I think that people should be looking at what he did out in Vegas and considering that much more, because he looked really good in the trench drills. He looked good in the game as well. And there were people that left that really impressed. I don't think that what he did in the combine and what he, you know, didn't do running wise in his pro day, that it should really affect his stock, but we'll see. I think it's good to know, to see that he had all those teams that were interested in him at the combine. And you'd imagine that a lot of those teams still remain interested in him. It's just, did he do enough for them to take a risk on him earlier in, let's say, the fifth round or sixth round? Or is he a guy that is going to last into that seventh round or possibly go undrafted and then have to be picked up after the draft is done? Now, there were three other guys that really stood out on the day, judging off of some of the numbers that are coming out. According to Inside Carolina, Amari Rodgers is the first one, ran a 4.53, and he's an interesting prospect because he's probably a lot higher rated on boards than a lot of Tar Heel fans would think. And, you know, Amari, I think I may have said Amari Gainer, you know, Amari is a guy that didn't play a lot at Carolina this past year, but I think people have to realize that a lot of that was not due to the fact that he wasn't good enough. It was the fact that Kamen Rucker developed into the guy that he became. Kamen Rucker was just such an impactful player that, as you saw towards the end of the season, he wasn't even coming off the field for Carolina. And that really limited what Amari Gainer was able to do, because Carolina brought him in. They thought it was going to be him and Rucker rotating a lot at that jack position. And then, you know, at times they would try to put Gainer on in place of Dez Evans, but that's a spot, that power end spot, where you have to hold a little bit more weight. They want you to be a little bit of a better run defender. And Gainer just simply didn't have the size to be able to do that. Now, the thing is that 40 time, you really, really like that 40 time for him, because it means that he's a guy that, yes, people are looking at him at the edge rusher spot. I believe he went through drills where he showcased himself there as well. But it also shows that he can play off-ball linebacker, which is what he has to be able to prove he can do to teams as well. They are what his strength is going to be is his versatility. He's a guy that's going to be able to be used in certain circumstances. If a team gets into a pinch at edge rusher, he's also a guy that in other circumstances, he shows you enough where he can play at the off-ball linebacker spot. And he did both in his college career. He was, you know, an edge rusher to begin his career at Florida State and became an edge rusher, of course, in his final season with Carolina. Then, you know, in the middle portion of his career with the Seminoles, he was a guy that lined up at off-ball linebacker and had some pretty decent success. Eventually, there was other talent that overtook him, but he was still a guy that was serviceable enough to play a role there in each of the next three seasons before he would transfer to Carolina. So to me, this did what it needed to do to show you that the athleticism is there. Now it's about, you know, showing once he gets to camp, because he's a guy that just from judging off of some of the evaluations that people have had of him, draft experts and where they have him on some of these boards, he's a guy that at least fits into that range. I don't think he's going to get drafted. There's a chance that somebody could take a risk on him if they like him that much and they really don't want anybody else to have a chance to get him. But I think ultimately he'll be a guy that will be signed pretty quickly after the draft. He'll be in a camp and he'll have a chance to showcase the versatility and see if maybe he can make a push to potentially stay on a roster. I think he's a guy that could fit into that mold of Tamon Fox and what he did with the New York Giants a couple of years ago, if he can get into the right system. The other guys that stood out, another guy from last year for Carolina, Giovanni Biggers, ran a 4.41 40, was the best number of anybody in attendance, and jumped a 35 and a half inch vertical, according to Inside Carolina. Both of those numbers are fantastic. And when you're a guy like that, the biggest thing that you have to do is put yourself on the radar for teams. And I think he did exactly that. Those athletic testing numbers are ones that open eyes. It's going to get people to look at your tape. And, I mean, look, the thing with Biggers is I don't think he was ever this all-conference caliber player, a guy that could take over games. But I do not think he was a guy that really was hurting Carolina. He played a ton of snaps for Carolina last year because he was a guy that they could rely on. He just wasn't a guy that was standing out like some of the other safeties that Carolina is hoping are going to be able to play for them in the coming years in that defensive backfield. I think that, you know, the switch in safeties coaches probably didn't help his development back there. But I do think that you saw last year, he became a reliable piece for Carolina. And I think that what he did on Thursday probably will pique some interest. And I think at the least will give him an opportunity to talk to some teams and convince them that he should be in camp with them. I don't think he's going to be a guy that immediately after the draft, a ton of teams are going to be scrambling to get. But I do think there is a good chance, based on these numbers alone, that somebody will be willing to take a risk on him, bring him in, and see if he can give them enough to at least keep him around for a couple of weeks during camp and potentially into the preseason. Now, the guy that really helped himself, probably more than anybody, was a guy that wasn't even with Carolina the last two seasons, and that is Bo Corrales. Now, the thing is that Bo went on, played at SMU and Texas State in each of the last 2 years. But played is a pretty loose term for what actually ended up happening. He totaled 8 catches in those 2 years. SMU, he was off to a pretty solid start, was starting to settle into the offense, and 3 games into the year got hurt. And at Texas State, he only played 4 games. They did not say that he got injured, but I find it hard to believe that a guy that talented wasn't able to climb the depth chart and play at a school like Texas State, who was not that good this past year. So I do think that it was a guy that his career was just riddled by injuries. He could never get himself on track, and it's put him in the spot where he's at today. But I think he was a guy that most people probably didn't even know was going to attempt to play at the NFL level, because you probably thought, with as many injuries as he's gone through, is this something where he's just going to say, look, football is not the thing for me at this point? That's not at all what he's doing. He came out, ran tremendously, 4.53 unofficially, according to Inside Carolina. which is an outstanding number for him. But most importantly, he caught the ball as well as anybody the other day out there as part of the group catching for Drake May. And remember, there is not a rapport with him and Drake May. Now, maybe there were a couple of passes that were thrown in that 2021 preseason, whether it was in spring or in the fall. But that was a guy that was with the first team, was with Sam Howell when he was still there. And yet Drake throwing to him, it looked like those two had been playing together for years. And he had an amazing jump ball catch when they were going through the red zone portion of May's script that caught everybody's attention. Shouldn't shock anybody. We saw that from him multiple times when he was at Carolina. He was a guy that had the size, but more importantly, had the jumping ability and the want to go up and get the 50-50 balls. And he did it so many times at Carolina. He displayed that again the other day. And he had another catch that really stood out to me that also got the facility buzzing when he caught one along the sidelines. It was a perfect throw from Drake, but it was one where it was right on the sideline. Bo had to tap his feet in to make the catch. And I'm pretty sure if you go back, if you were to go back and review it, if this was an NFL game, he got both feet in. He did that the entire day. He caught everything that was thrown his way. And it's the reason why I think there is a legitimate chance that someone will take a risk on him. For him, I never question the talent. I think the injuries are the thing that you always question about him. All right, guys. So there's your look back at the pro day for Carolina. Now let's transition. We're going to get you an advertisement from the autograph group. Josh has recorded that. He'll do that for us real quick. And then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about recruiting. Carolina lands a tight end commitment. They're second in the class. And also they lose one of their targets along the defensive line. How concerned are we? And where does Carolina go next? All that coming up next. But first, here is a word from Autograph about this amazing app that you guys have to check out.
Hey there, Josh here for the Autograph Fandom app. Want to get rewarded for listening to our show? The team at Autograph, co-founded by Tom Brady, is redefining the fan experience by letting users earn points for the acts of fandom they take every day, like listening to this show. The Autograph Fandom app gives you access to your favorite UNC content in one place and offers rewards like tickets, exclusive merchandise, and much more. You're already listening to our show, but now you can earn points and get rewarded for it. Head over to the Apple App Store and search for Autograph Fandom Rewarded and download it today for free using the referral code HEALTOUGH. Link and code are also in our podcast description.
All right, yeah, make sure you guys go over, check out the Autograph app. It's amazing, and it's the app that all fans need because I don't know if you guys have seen it from me, from some of the other guys in the Tar Heel community. They are giving away amazing prizes. They sent a couple of guys to the Sweet 16 matchup. Now, they probably regret going to that Sweet 16 matchup, but they were there in person, paid just $16 for the tickets, and they got to see Carolina not only, you know, in person there, but from a suite, great opportunities, great rewards like that being given out all the time from Autograph. So make sure that you guys check that out. Now let's move to the recruiting trail, the 2025 trail for the Tar Heels, and tell you about a guy that Carolina landed a week ago when Carolina was playing in the Spectrum Center against Michigan State. Right before that happened, Carolina added their second tight end to the 2025 class in Marshall Pritchett, the three-star tight end out of Raven Gap, Georgia. He's a guy that's at one of the preparatory academies that a lot of people will be talking about in this recruiting cycle because of just how much talent is there. And he ultimately might be their best player. 6'5", 211-pound tight end, but a guy that a lot of people say that they think Carolina could use him a little bit at receiver. Now, ultimately, the position he's probably going to end up playing is tight end. The thing is how quickly is he going to be able to get on the field? Because in order to play tight end at Carolina, as we heard last year from tight ends coach Freddie Kitchens, you have to be able to block and block at a pretty decent level. He doesn't really do a whole lot of it at the high school level. A lot of the stuff that he does do blocking-wise is when he's lined up on the outside, sometimes occasionally when he's been in the slot, and it's against corners. It's going to be much different going up against ACC linebackers, defensive ends. He's going to have to learn and learn quickly how to be able to hold himself up in that area of the game. Don't see him line up a lot in line. There's a couple of moments that you do see it, and he looks pretty solid. There is something there. It's just about refining that and showing that he can consistently hold up in the run game against some of these defensive ends and linebackers, some of the best in the country that he will have to face year in and year out when he gets to the ACC level. So, I mean, that's the biggest question with him. And I think it's going to be what determines how quickly he gets on the field, because everything else is really there for him. One thing that could really push him to get on the field earlier is what he does as a receiver. And you may say, well, Carolina has brought in a lot of really good receiving tight ends over the years. Yes, they definitely have. But one of the things that you notice about these guys is that their route trees when they come in are relatively limited. And it makes sense. I mean, even at the college level, typically your tight ends are not going to have the most complex route trees. But because he plays on the outside and because he has the twitch that you see when you turn on his film, Marshall Pritchett is a guy that can run a much more complex route tree, and it allows, you know, his high school team and potentially Carolina down the line to do a lot of different things with him. It's why a lot of people think he can play on the outside when he gets to Carolina. He is really one of the best route runners I've seen when watching film of high school tight ends. You see that it's very polished. He has good, sharp breaks in and out of his routes, and it allows him to create a lot of space, especially when he's matched up against linebackers. But it's also a thing that if teams do eventually shift and start using corners on him or even slots, nickels on him, then he's a guy that can still find a way to free himself up. It also comes in handy after the catch, because that twitch, the shiftiness that he brings, allows him to create those yards after the catch that could be important, especially for, you know, a tight end position, which is seen as really a safety valve type of position. So the fact that he creates separation quickly and early, the fact that he then can make plays after he catches the football, is why he could be such a great weapon for Carolina at the tight end position. He's also got the height on the outside, has, you know, the ability to run a pretty complex route tree, where if Carolina wanted to use him on the outside, they would. Now, ultimately, here's what I probably envision for him when he gets to Chapel Hill. He's going to have that ability to play on the outside. We also heard the same thing about Bryson Nesbitt, and we haven't really seen him. Now, this guy, he's built even a little bit different than Bryson Nesbitt. When you're 6'5", that's something that at times it's going to be hard not to get tempted to put him on the outside and just throw the ball up to him. Now, you don't see it a lot on film. They didn't throw a lot of 50-50 balls to him. I'd like to see a few more this year on his high school highlight tape. And again, maybe they did throw more to him and we just didn't see it. I don't have the film of each and every game of him to be able to thoroughly break him down and tell you exactly what he did. So this could be someone that just can't handle that. But I'd like to see more of that this year, because if he is a guy that can go up and get those contested catches, then that's where you could see Carolina using him on the outside. They're probably going to use him primarily as an inline tight end once he can prove to them that he can block at the level that they need him to, especially if Carolina continues to load up in the backfield like they have done in years past with Michael Carter, Javonte Williams, even now, you know, with Amarian Hampton, and hopefully into the future with guys like Jordan Louis and Davian Gals. Those will be guys where it'll just be too hard if they're succeeding the way that the running backs before them have, and if the way that we think we could see Amarian Hampton succeed this year, it'll be too hard to keep the football, you know, out of those running backs' hands and really leaning on them unless you've got a once-in-a-generation quarterback. But that's why he needs to be able to prove to the staff that he can block. And whenever he does that, I think then you'll see Carolina be able to use him. They'll use him there, and then at times they'll probably split him out, especially when they get into the red zone and look to use him on the outside, even if at times it's just as a decoy. This is why this pickup is so interesting. He's also a guy that, you know, the talent is very evident there across the board. It's a reason why he's going to be a guy that is going to have a shot at some point, especially if he shines in the camp cycle that's getting ready to come up in this local area where he'll probably be in attendance. If he shines there, that could help him push to be a four-star. If he shines in his senior year of high school, that could also help as well, especially with all the eyes that will be on him at Raven Gap this season. So I definitely think there's an opportunity that for Carolina to have another four-star prospect in this class, a guy that goes from being a three-star when they land him to being a four-star. And, of course, he'll come in with Logan Farrell. And this shores up that tight end room because, you know, this offseason, there's a good chance you could probably lose both Bryson Nesbitt and John Copenhaver. If that ends up happening, then you would feel pretty confident that Carolina would still be in pretty good shape because of the bodies that they bring in there. Two in this last class and Ryan Ward, Timothy Lawson, although Timothy Lawson is a guy you got to monitor. It's probably the reason why Carolina is bringing in two tight ends in this class because he's a guy that's splitting time with the baseball team. So eventually he'll end up having to make some sort of decision on his career. This group, Pritchett, Farrell, two guys that I think complement each other very, very well. And I think it really gives Carolina a very strong class at the tight end position. The other bit of news in this class is the news that Carolina loses one of their top targets along the defensive line. And that's London Merritt, a guy that transferred out of the state of Georgia where Carolina has been doing a lot of work and now will be in playing for IMG Academy down in Bradenton, Florida. And it's probably a big part of the reason why Carolina, who had done so much work to get back into this recruitment, it doesn't end up ultimately working out for them and why he ends up going to one of the bigger schools in the country. Now, look, Carolina had their work cut out for him regardless, but if he had stayed in the state of Georgia, you really do wonder with the way that Carolina has recruited that state the last couple of years, especially since Charlton Warren returned to Carolina. That was a state that he had succeeded at so much in his previous stops and in his previous stint at Carolina that, you know, it made sense that Carolina would hit that state pretty hard, but they have done a really, really good job there. Some would argue an even better job there than they've done here in their home state over the last couple of cycles. And I think this cycle is not going to be any different. That's a big focus. The, you know, in-state guys are going to be huge for Carolina as well, although they're already out of the running for David Sanders, who left them out of his top six schools. And, you know, a couple other guys have Carolina already out of the race or have committed elsewhere, including Isaiah Campbell, the four-star defensive tackle from the Raleigh-Durham area. So, I mean, Georgia is going to be huge for him, and that's what I think would have allowed me to still believe that Carolina had a chance here. They fought to get their way back into his recruitment and Bryce Davis's recruitment after they made the move to Ted Monachino at defensive line coach. And I think Ohio State, there's clear attraction there with the guys that they have produced, with the fact that they are competing for national titles every single year. And I think ultimately it probably would have been something too tough for Carolina to overcome. But with him out of the picture, now Carolina has to look elsewhere. And this is one of those position rooms where Carolina is going to need guys. There's no doubt about that because there are a pretty good amount of upperclassmen in this class. And now you kind of look around and you say, where are the guys that Carolina is closely tied to in this class? At one point, Ethan Utley, a four-star prospect out of Nashville, was a guy that Carolina was in the running for. He's now committed to Tennessee. Carolina was out of that way before he made that announcement. Another guy in the state of Tennessee, Antonio Carter, is an interesting player. And I think Carolina's still got a pretty good chance with him, but there hasn't been a lot of buzz around him lately. So Carolina's still going to have to work hard for that one, especially in a state where Carolina has landed guys before, has started to pick up a little momentum there in the last couple of years, but doesn't have nearly the roots that they do in North Carolina, in Virginia, and in Georgia. So, then you look at the in-state guys. And as I mentioned earlier, Isaiah Campbell has already gone to Clemson out of Durham. And, you know, you look at Trajan Odom, a guy that was playing for Panther Creek High School in Cary, and he's a guy that's been looking pretty much out of state. Carolina, you know, still, I think, has a shot. But I do think that you look at Odom now transferring to Weddington High School right here in the Charlotte area. I mean, Carolina has recruited this area very well, but Carolina's guy that they had committed in the last class that played for Weddington High School flipped to NC State. NC State is also a factor in this recruitment, but I think you look at the other schools that are involved here, Ohio State, LSU, Oregon, USC. These are schools that are going to have bigger NIL collectives. Carolina is really going to have to bring it. So I think Antonio Carter is the guy that Carolina is probably going to have to lock in on here. Christian Evans, another guy that Carolina offered recently. He's an unranked prospect out of Stonebridge High School in Ashburn, Virginia, is a guy that I think Carolina will also probably be pushing hard for. Also worth keeping an eye on Devin Ankrum, a guy that's out of Mill Creek High School, one of the powerhouse schools in the state of Georgia. Those are the guys that I think at this point you probably have to watch for with Carolina. But this is one that definitely hurts a little bit because Carolina had battled back into it and were at least, you know, probably felt pretty solid about their chances if he stayed in Georgia, and he ends up moving on, and now he's going to end up playing for Ohio State. So a lot of work to do, and we'll, of course, have you covered on everything going on the 2025 recruiting trail for Carolina. Look, they're off to a good start. They've got six commitments in the class. They've landed, you know, a couple of four-star prospects already, and there's reasons to believe that this coaching staff, especially if they have a good year on the field, is going to be able to rally and put together the type of recruiting class that they have in years past. So I would say that, you know, keep an eye on the site over the next couple of months. I think there's some guys here in the next couple of weeks that you'll probably see start to make some decisions because there's another round of unofficial visits coming up. But when you really need to lock in on the recruiting trail is at the start of June. And then for that entire month, there will be official visits going on. Carolina will host a lot of the guys that they've already landed in this class that will then be trying to help them recruit a huge group of uncommitted prospects, including some of the best from the state of North Carolina, from the state of Georgia that Carolina is trying to reel in. The best place to keep up with everything that's going on the recruiting trail and everything Tar Heel football is over on the website, heeltoughblog.com. Got all of that stuff up there. Got that Marshall Pritchett article up there for you guys to check out. So make sure that you guys are checking that out. And then also make sure you're checking out all the stuff that we have from the Pro Day, the breakdown of Drake May's day. Also going to put up something on the guys that had good days for themselves out there that probably helped their draft stock. So keep an eye out for all of that over on the website at heeltoughblog.com. Meanwhile, on the basketball side of things, we're into postseason mode here. Where, you know, we'll be talking about the guys that are potentially, you know, looking at transferring, the decision of RJ Davis. We'll have that covered, as well as Carolina, you know, going into the transfer portal and trying to find guys that can help them for next year as they look to replace a guy like Armando Bacot, who's been a staple of the program for the last 5 years, a guy like Cormac Ryan, who came in and gave them so much this year, all that stuff. We'll have you covered on that on the website and, of course, over on the Four Corners podcast as well. Make sure that you, if you're a listener to the podcast, that you are subscribed to the Four Corners podcast as well as this podcast. And if you're someone that's watching on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter, wherever it's at, make sure that you keep an eye out on these pages for Twitter. It's at @HTB_Josh when we go live for the basketball side of things, also retweeted always on the Heel Tough blog page and the Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ page. So make sure that you keep an eye out for all of that stuff moving forward. Plenty of podcasts still coming your way, even though we're in the off-season mode. And plenty of articles still on the horizon for you as well. So that wraps it up for this edition of the podcast. Want to thank everybody that has been in watching. Want to thank all those that will listen to this edition in the future. And as always, go Tar Heels!